previously on Popping Collars.
I'm going to make a little statement, and then if this is the right time, I'm going to make a big statement. But it's kind of...
Go for it.
Betsy, you're so good. You always are the good enabler for just going for it.
Great.
I assume she's like that as a person at school too. So
definitely.
Welcome to Popping Collars, the podcast that lives at the intersection of religion and pop culture. I'm Liz Easton, the canon to the ordinary in the Diocese of Nebraska, and I'm here with my co-host today, Betsy Gonzalez. Betsy, who are you and what do you do?
I'm Betsy Gonzalez, and I am the head chaplain at Episcopal High School in Alexandria, Virginia.
Awesome. And I'm here also with Greg Knight. Greg, who are you and what do you do?
My name is Greg Knight. I am the Director of Children and Youth Ministries at the Church of Bethesda by the Sea in Palm Beach, Florida.
Awesome. And our special guest on Popping Collars today is Sarah Miller. She's one of my DioNeb colleagues. Sarah, tell us, where are you and what do you do?
So I am priest in charge at St. James Episcopal Church in Fremont, Nebraska.
Awesome. Thank you for joining us, Sarah.
It's great to be here. This is my first podcast experience.
Oh my gosh.
This side of the
Well, you picked a great one.
Yeah. Wow.
So get an agent, Sarah. Get an agent.
Yeah. Get an agent now.
This is how it all begins.
We're very popular. So this is episode 56 of Popping Collars, believe it or not. And our topic today is the NBC sitcom, The Good Place, which just wrapped up its first season and was greenlighted for a second season. And the premise is that a woman named Eleanor Shellstrop dies in like a crazy grocery store accident and comes to in the waiting room, basically, of the afterlife. And she's met there by this sort of sweet, avuncular, quirky, celestial being named Michael, who is the architect for the neighborhood that she'll be living in, The Good Place. And Eleanor quickly figures out that she's there as a mistake. It's like a clerical error. She's a pretty horrible person on earth. So that's the basic premise of kind of a fantastical sitcom. And there are spoilers to come because the last two episodes of the season, the ending episodes, really kind of pull a switcheroo in a really actually masterful way. So my question, just to get the ball rolling for you guys, and this is totally unfair because I didn't give you a heads up, but if a neighborhood in the afterlife was designed just for you, what would be some of the things in the neighborhood?
When I was in a youth group as a kid, as a high schooler, there was this retreat center that we would go to, and they had this giant porch with, like, rocking chairs all sitting out on the front porch. And we would just like hang out and rock and talk. And it was like this place where people would just kind of come and go. It was like this hive of activity, but everything was just relaxed. Everything was calm. Everything was beautiful and quiet. So I think my afterlife would have to have a porch where a lot of people could come and hang out. Like that would be a good place for me, I think.
It's hard for me to pick a specific place because I was thinking of all the places I would want access to. So mountains, beach, big booming city. So I think like I would have to have a pretty big neighborhood, I think, or at least some like high speed rail to get around. My equivalent, I think, of the front porch, the big front porch, is like a streetcar in New Orleans where we're all kind of like on this big ride around together and you just get all sorts of people in one place and it's just full of life, full of conversation, and you're all headed in the same direction somewhere great. So I think I would have to have lots of different options, I guess.
What about you, Betsy?
Well, it's super weird that Greg brings up that image because one of my favorite picture books about God is called Big Mama Makes the World. And it pictures God as a big Buddha-like mom, you know, and actually, I guess, yeah, more of a, you know, she's just a mama and she's making the world, she's creating the world, doing it all with a baby on her hip and getting done everything she needs to get done. And there is a picture in there that I have told kids in my class. if I can choose what heaven looks like, this is what it looks like for me. And it's her as the sun is going down, and she's created human beings because the creepers and crawlers and the diggers and divers, none of them can tell stories. And she wants stories. She wants to tell stories with people. And then at the end, the sun's going down and they're all silhouetted, and there's Big Mama with the baby on her lap laughing while the people are around telling stories on the front stoop.
My afterlife would include frozen yogurt. It would include Netflix. It would include wine. It would include great Nebraska sunrises and sunsets, which
it's like you're in heaven right now, Liz.
It is
a cornfield, right? It's a cornfield somewhere. I'm just saying.
It's the gorgeous Nebraska sandhills. Hashtag blessed. That's my life. But honestly, last week, Sarah and I both had this experience. We had our annual clergy retreat at a retreat center in Schuyler, Nebraska, which is in the midst of cornfields. And we did like an old-fashioned hymn sing around the piano in the chapel one night. And it was really an image, like it was a feeling of what some aspect of heaven must feel like. This people really raising their voices in song in a joyful way, bad singers and good singers both, like everyone kind of blending together. You know, it wasn't intended to be worship. It was just intended to be kind of a fun activity. And it was really, really glorious. But it's interesting to me, you know, like this is a TV show on network TV, and there's some pointing toward religious images and sort of religious histories, I guess, of the afterlife. But for the most part, it's entirely secular, just like our culture is. So it just led me to believe, like, I wonder, even as a Christian, I don't spend a lot of time thinking about the afterlife. But I don't know what people who are like spiritual but not religious, how they think of the afterlife, because this show made me realize like they are.
Well, Liz, you were saying that you posted up on Facebook that you were binging the show, mm-hmm. right? Which Greg and I both agreed. We couldn't imagine watching this show kind of one trickle at a time. Like this is even being a network show, binge worthy.
Yeah.
And better binged. I enjoyed it binged. But you said you got some love when you posted up on Facebook that you were watching the show.
Yeah, it was the most love I've ever gotten from a Popping Collars related post. That's for sure. And it was neat. It was a lot of people that don't usually interact with my churchy stuff. So like friends from high school and college, like just, you know, like saying I love the show or just like hitting the like button a lot. So like I didn't really know if a lot of people were watching it or not. I didn't know if it was popular. I don't think it was as popular as they thought it would be, but it seems to have had a lot of people watching it.
I resisted for a long time because I thought I would get so hung up on the ways that it didn't match my theology of the afterlife. I thought it was going to be like this excruciating experience of like that dissonance, I guess, between my own understanding of theology and all of that it was just, I wouldn't be able to enjoy it.
So like I set it up that, right, you know, this one person, Eleanor, she's not supposed to be there. She's trying to learn how to be a better person. And it works. She does kind of become a better person. And what she ends up doing is confessing to the whole neighborhood, including Michael, the neighborhood designer, that she's there. She shouldn't be there.
Because the good place isn't the good place.
Well, that's the reveal, right? They have to do a whole bunch of bargaining about who's going to go to the bad place and who gets to stay in the good place. And what they figure out, what Eleanor figures out is that in fact, they've been in the bad place all along. So what happens is that these four people have been designed to just torture each other for eternity because of their particular personalities and their particular insecurities, really. And that is what makes the good place actually the bad place.
Liz asked something earlier where she was like, is there some kind of like religious aspect to the show? And it just had me thinking, like, just the fact that we're talking about anything, good place, bad place, any place, doesn't that kind of concede something? I mean, I guess I would say religious, but I guess supernatural. This show does the mythology of how we talk about the afterlife really well. How the good stuff you did in your life outweigh the bad stuff that you did in your life. And if you were good, you go here. And if you were bad, you go there. I think a lot of people kind of embrace that outside of any religious tradition. Like that's kind of something that you grow up with because it feels just. But this sort of black white good bad conversation, that's not really going to get you anywhere when you're talking about what's happening to you after you die.
I mean, that idea of sort of like a meritocracy afterlife is not Christian, right? At least it's not sort of our Orthodox Christian understanding of it. And in the early in the season, when you think that it's still the good place, all of the reasons, all of the points that you rack up are just ridiculous. Like, did you see the Red Hot Chili Peppers in concert? Which I have, by the way.
I've had a vanity license plate.
Oh, no. I have. Right. Like, do you cut people off in traffic? Do you, you know, this and that, which really is like the heresy of Pelagianism, right? So I guess that's a good question for everyone is like, how did this whole thing square with your understanding of the afterlife? Did it challenge it or did it, was it just something else entirely?
If I really get down to like, what do I really think heaven and the afterlife and all of that, I think I'm much more, not agnostic, but I'm more comfortable leaving that to be vague or unknown or just accepting that it'll be really great. But I'm really interested, I guess, in artistic depictions of the afterlife. I was the 13-year-old who read Dante. I read the whole Divine Comedy when I was really young. And then I read it a couple other times in college and in different classes. I was an English major and we had to read like big classic epics. So I actually really love that depiction of the afterlife. And I think it jives with Christianity, obviously, but it also, I think what it has in common is, especially for people in the bad place, part of the understanding of what's going on is that the torture that's going on is mostly self-inflicted, that actually the worst punishment is to be, is to have to live with yourself and with others like you.
For me, when I teach the Bible, that one of the things that God gets on people the most about is lack of hospitality and lack of welcome and lack of trust. And all of that calls for you to be able to be outside yourself, to get beyond your own business out into others. You know, it's all about them and my experience, and I'm not really focusing outwardly on your experience. And the Eleanor's points actually start to go up when she drops the motivation to save her own butt and is able to be outside of herself.
Well, except for, I totally agree with that. But what's so like freaks you out about the show is that all of that, the point system, all of it is a construct. Like none of that is real for the good place that hasn't yet been revealed to us.
Quite true.
So what we can see is like in the fake good place, there's a meritocracy. The fake good place is Pelagian.
What about the real good place?
I don't know. Because the real bad place takes into account sort of the whole of yourself and your motivations. And it's not based on a ranking system or you did this many bad things. It has to do with like your relationships and your motivations. So I would imagine that the flip side, the real good place, is like that as well, that it's not based on good deeds or bad deeds. It's based on how you live your life.
I guess that then begs the question, like, why is there a bad place then? This is where I get really uncomfortable with Christianity, because I think that a lot of times we speak way too authoritatively about what's going to happen to us after we die. I mean, I've said this on the podcast before when we were talking about death and stuff, like, I have a real anxiety about death because I have no idea what it's going to be like to not exist, like in this body, you know, with these memories, like whatever. And that really, it makes me nervous. It makes me sad. It makes me anxious. I think I've shared before, like I grew up in the evangelical church in the South, and like all of this stuff is framed in this very kind of merit-based way, but it's merit-based based on belief. So like, you know, I would always have pastors or youth leaders or something like that saying, if you believe in Jesus and you die and it turns out that it's not real, well, then you haven't lost anything. You've just lived your life as a good person. But if you don't believe in Jesus and you die and it turns out the whole Jesus thing is real, well, then you've lost eternity. And I'm like, you know, that's the kind of thing that sticks with you and makes you really nervous about death and like what all this stuff is about. And Christians use this language a lot. Not just evangelicals. Like, we talk about heaven and stuff like that in the Episcopal Church all the time. And I'm like, what are we even talking about? Like, how do we know like any of this stuff?
Right. And like, I'm not a great theologian, so you guys should jump in. But you know, what we know about heaven from scripture isn't any of our popular conceptions of heaven. Like, we know about salvation. We know about the perfection of God's plan for the universe. We know about the remaking of humanity and earth. We know about the salvation we find in Jesus, about the bodily resurrection. We don't know about like a place you go to. As far as I can tell, the reference to the place that you go to is when Jesus is on the cross hanging between two criminals. And he says, you know, later today, I'll see you in paradise. Right. I don't know. Sarah, what do you think?
Oh,
help
man.
Help us, Sarah.
Yeah, we've got Sarah on as a theologian. Go, Sarah.
Oh, gosh. So at the cathedral in Omaha, which is where I was before I moved out here to Fremont, we did a study of Surprised by Hope, which is N.T. Wright, which I don't align with him on everything, but I think the way he interprets all of this stuff about afterlife and what's actually going to happen to Earth is really interesting, because he, to Liz's point earlier, he really grounds it in scripture. And in scripture, we don't have like the place in the clouds with the angels and, you know, harps and singing and all that. The most vivid image we have is at the very end of Revelation, when the New Jerusalem comes down to earth, heaven comes down to earth, and these two kind of spheres of reality, heaven and earth, which were created to be together at the very beginning and that have become alienated in some way through sin, are reunited and married, and we as human beings and all creation get to share in that reunion. So I grew up Southern and evangelical too, Greg. So, so I was actually last week at the clergy retreat. I can't remember. Oh, we were talking about some of the radio networks in Nebraska, and we've got them in, I'm from Alabama. We've got them in Alabama too, where, and I was there's like a kind of an altar call over the radio. And I did this perfect rendition of like the Southern preacher, you know, who before you leave church says, if you die on the way home tonight, where are you going to go? Yeah. So it's that piercing. And I think, you know, it messes you up. Does, yeah. I can tell you that as an 8-year-old, it really does. Yeah. I'm so uninterested in that kind of approach to thinking about all of this stuff.
Well, and that imagery you talk about in Revelation is a return back to that Garden of Eden, right? That rivers and the water and the tree of life, and it's all, you know, that it all goes, it's that circle. I love that as my final class in biblical theology, because the whole time they learn that the answers in my class isn't really, you can't say Jesus is an answer to all of the things. It's actually creation. Creation is always, because it's about, oh, hey, some water popped up. What does this remind us of? Creation, creation, creation. And back to that unity point that you talked about. And I think that's why some of my imagery that I really are drawn to is that idea of journeying to the heart of God.
I love that image of like N.T. Wright's exegesis of Revelation and really kind of the whole New Testament. And I love it because it squares with my understanding of God, you know, of this sort of like immense, creative, merciful, just being. It's epic, right? That idea of heaven and earth meeting in the last days and justice reigning on earth is epic. And that's the God that I love and the God that I follow. But it does not answer anybody's anxiety about what happens after you die. And I think that pastorally, that's what that becomes really difficult.
If you ask the people at my parish, what happens to you when you die? I bet 8 out of 10 of them would say, I'm going to go to heaven. I'm going to be in a body. You know, I'm going to look like I did when I was like 20s, 30s, something like that. And I'm going to see all of my family members that have died before, and we're going to be reunited, and it's going to be this glorious moment. And then maybe it's hearkening back to that whole, you know, front porch scenario of like, I just like to be reunited. And that's what people are longing for. And that's the way that they're able to say it sort of in human terms and not necessarily in God terms.
Like, I don't think it's unorthodox or unbiblical to have that belief. I think a lot of it's been shaped by our popular culture and sort of popular American religion, but I don't think it has to be one or the other.
Yeah, but I guess the key part is, though, that you're still going to be you. Like, the right. You that you are is going to be the you that exists in eternity.
Right. As opposed to a heavenly body type.
Right.
Right. Well, I have another question, and maybe it's playing into the fact that like I don't have a strong notion about hell. You know, we've talked about this on the show. We've talked about the devil, and you know, my devil was the Dinty Moore ham devil with the pitchfork, and I found it really scary and all of those sorts of things. But that not a strong devil made me do it kind of idea, you know, growing up with a parent who says, you know, we all have shadow sides of ourselves and, you know, that sort of language. Right. But Eleanor, the idea of redemption, you know, the idea of grace, the idea that somehow we can be transformed, because, yes, she's doing all of this in the afterlife. But you have to focus then that question also outwardly as well. You know, for those people that you might think are beyond what is forgivable, are we beyond fixing? Are we never beyond fixing? And I think that her character is playing inside that.
And she's doing it because the stakes are really high. You know, she knows that she's going to go to hell if she doesn't figure this out, which she didn't know on earth, or if she knew it, she didn't believe it. Sarah earlier was describing sort of Dante's notion of contrapasso, that you're punished, but you're sort of punished by your own sins over and over and over again in hell. So what would your bad place be like?
Being alone.
Really?
Yep. Yep. I gain energy off being with people. I can take my own alone time, and that's fine. But, you know, all the parts of me that always wanted to be a good journaler and just sit on prayer and da, da, da. All that stuff is super difficult for me. And so just the element of being alone would be awful.
A lifetime of centering prayer would be my idea of hell. It is torture for me. It is utter torture. And it is a discipline that I turn to every day and like, blah, blah, blah. I'm so bad at it. Spiritual director assures me that like everyone says they're bad at it. And I want to be like, no, they can't be as bad as me.
Being stuck behind somebody in a labyrinth, like when they just won't walk fast enough and you get like that labyrinth rage, you know, that labyrinth road rage of like, we all know you're holy. Just get out of my way. I'm trying to get to the middle of this thing. Like, yeah, that definitely.
Oh, you know what? Here's my contrapasso, traffic jam. Mm. Because I am not nice.
You can get a little ragey, road ragey.
Yeah. Friends and like, it's a side of me that people don't see that often, but I'll have friends get in the car with me and they're like, who are you? And also let me out. Like,
I'm good here. I can walk the last 8 blocks.
Yep. Doing great.
Protect me, O God, through this heaven and hell, past the euphoric highs and the lows that they sell. For when I reach my peak between life and my death, will I still see light as bleak, weak, earthly, and wrecked? Wrecked? Right.
we're going to close out this episode of Popping Collars with our new segment called Employee Picks. And I feel like we've done enough explaining to millennials about what an employee pick is, but do we have to do it again?
No, this is Blockbuster. This is the shelf where people's picks exist. Absolutely.
Right. And then you get a sense of a person's sort of taste and sensibilities over time. Like I'm 13 years old and I read all three installments of Dante's Divine Comedy.
Right.
Like if Sarah was the student librarian at the middle school, her employee pick would have been
very true. Divine Comedy. You are more accurate than you know.
So Greg, you have an employee pick for us?
I do. So after I got done binge watching The Good Place, I started binge watching a show on A&E called Leah Remini Scientology: The Aftermath. It's a documentary where Leah Remini, who was a Scientologist for most of her life growing up, she split with the church like 4 or 5 years ago, and now she's going around and she interviews other people who were in the Church of Scientology who broke away, who left. And actually, this is the interesting thing, who escaped. That's the word that all of them use whenever they talk about leaving the church. It's never like, I left the church, I escaped the church. It's always how they explain it. And it's this really powerful series that where you get to know kind of the heartbreak that families go through, specifically with this organization. But I think really when it comes to just cult behavior in general, where you have these breaks, you have these fractures in the family unit, because if you're not with us, you're kind of against us, you know, that kind of mentality. It's a really cool series. It's super sad in some places, but also kind of hopeful, kind of strangely hopeful.
Mm-hmm. I watched it when I was at my parents' house right around Christmas time. And it struck me how really brave it is for her to do this show. They sort of come at her, and the Church of Scientology has a whole framework for intimidating people. And it was really brave of her to do that.
Yeah. She does a good job too of explaining why people are in these organizations. There's always this, I feel like there's a lot of judgment that usually comes at people who are involved in things like Scientology or some other cult religion, where people are like, well, why didn't you just leave? Like when you saw that it was getting weird, why didn't you just leave? And she's like, it's not like that. Like you can't leave because they've convinced you that if you leave, you are a horrible, evil person. And everyone who has ever left is a horrible, evil person. At their heart, these are good people. They're just in a bad situation that they can't get out of because they've been convinced that it's not an option. And this show really brings that to light and is really helpful, I think.
Yeah.
So that's my pick, Leah Remini.
I love it.
Great. The Aftermath. And also pick up her book too, which is also really good. It's called Troublemaker.
I love it. Well, thank you, Team Popping Collars, episode 56. Thank you, especially Sarah, for joining us for the first time.
Thanks for having me. This was fun.
Where can they find us, Liz?
Oh, I'll tell you. Thank you. Thanks, Greg. So you can find our podcast at our website, poppingcollarspodcast.com. You can also find it on iTunes or Stitcher or really anywhere else where you find your podcasts. And you can find us on EpiscopalCafe.com, where we are a member of Episcopal Cafe's podcasting network, along with a few other cool Episcopal podcasts. As always, thanks for joining us at Popping Collars. We'll see you next time, and keep those collars popped.
Pop, pop.